Essen Dorma from the opera Turin Dot. I Will Conquer, I Will Conquer. Welcome to Healthy Vision, the talk radio show that helps you conquer your vision loss. Dr. Edward Conrad is a board-certified ophthalmologist and homeopathic doctor, author of 7 best-selling books. Healthy Vision is dedicated to bringing you the latest information for a lifetime of healthy sight and to help you conquer your eye problems. And now your host, America's favorite eye doctor, Dr. Edward Conrad.
Welcome to Healthy Vision. This is your host, Dr. Edward Conrad, and thank you so much for tuning in this evening. This evening we have a special guest, Dr. Paul Singh, who's a professor of ophthalmology and a clinical researcher. And we're going to talk about an exciting development in ophthalmology that many of us have been waiting for. And this is a laser that can eliminate, in most cases, completely those nasty floaters. So, Dr. Singh, welcome to Healthy Vision.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So let's begin by talking about, it's interesting because just recently I've been seeing more and more patients that have been frustrated with floaters. And I came across a couple of Facebook sites, support groups for people with floaters. And it's really a devastating problem. So I wonder if you could just share your experience on patients that you see that are just so incapacitated with floaters.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. Yeah, you know, I think we've, as a profession, I think we've underestimated the impact that floaters have on patients' daily life and basically daily functioning. You know, floaters are opacities, the clumps in the gel, the vitreous, the middle part of the eye, and it blocks the light from entering the eye or from hitting the retina, the back lining of the eye. And so it causes shadow, basically. And although it's a very common, normal aging process, it doesn't mean it has very little impact on daily functioning. In fact, some of these floaters can be so impactful that they can affect people's driving, reading, daily activities. The problem historically is that we didn't have a great option to treat. So we tend as a profession, if we don't have a good option, to minimize the impact. And so a lot of us doctors for many years were never taught about how to treat floaters. We were never taught to deal with addressing floaters. So many of us, when we see a floater, a patient in the office who complain about it, we say, oh, don't worry, it's normal. You'll get used to it. The brain will adapt to it. Unfortunately, many of the patients who we see are stuck suffering with these floaters and learn to somehow deal with it. But after treating these patients now for the last about 5 or 6 years now, there are about 440, almost 5,000 cases in the last 5 years, we've realized the impact that people have with their floaters. In fact, I've had people come back and say, doc, I can drive again, I can read again. Because it's not only a distraction where you have to be driving and this big clump, this big shadow comes in your vision, you have to shake your head to move out of the way. That can be a safety hazard. But even for simple computer activities, it may interfere with reading speed. We've done some studies looking at how quickly someone can read. The flow of reading, the concentration of patients can be affected by these floaters. So I think what we're seeing more and more now with data, as well as my clinical experience, is that these floaters can have a significant impact, and I always rival that to even cataracts. And nowadays with cataracts, we don't wait to take out cataracts when someone has an issue with, like, driving or reading, et cetera. We say, let's take out the cataract. It's the same principle of floaters now. Even though they're a very normal process, we don't have to wait to treat these patients now because we do have options. So I think it's something that we've underestimated for many, many years, but now we're finally realizing there's such an impact on these patients' daily functioning.
How common are floaters? And maybe you could discuss some of the common causes. Because I know that most ophthalmologists, when you first have the onset of the floaters, you're concerned about a retinal detachment. You know, you got to see. And for the people that are listening to the radio show, you know, if you do have a sudden onset of floaters, you should go to your ophthalmologist or eye doctor and be evaluated. But let's talk a little bit about some causes and when you need to be concerned if it might be a serious problem.
Sure, absolutely. So the whole back of the eye, the gel, it's called a vitreous, is basically made up of a collection or fibers of what we call collagen. And the collagen fibers are cross-linked together, and they actually have a negative charge to keep them repelled. There's water that fills the space, so you have a kind of a clear gel. That gel is very tightly attached to the back lining of the eye, which is called the retina. So the retina is like the film of a camera, the film of our eye. It's a little lining that aligns the back of the eye that has all the receptors that accept the light and help us see. Now, when the jelly is attached to the back lining of the eye, as the jelly changes over time, we lose that negative charge of those collagen fibers, and what happens is the jelly changes its consistency. As a gel, the vitreous changes its consistency, it starts to become liquefied, and it pulls away from the retina. And so as the jelly pulls away from the retina and is making its kind of normal changes, it can sometimes tug at the retina as it's coming off the retina and pull it with it and cause what we call a retinal tear or even what we call a retinal detachment where the retina actually is torn. Now, the symptoms of that can sometimes be folders because what happens when the gel pulls away from the retina and tears, it to look like a floater also, or multiple floaters. And so when that happens, we can't differentiate on the phone if someone says, I have a new floater. What we want to do is have the patient come in to evaluate, to dilate the eye so they can look way in the back of the eye and look at the retina at the periphery to make sure there's no small tears or holes, because if there is a small tear or a hole, that could lead to what we call a detachment where the retina comes off. And that is something you want to treat right away. So we always recommend anybody who has a new symptom of a floater to go in to see the eye doctor right away so they can evaluate for those retinal tears, detachment, and treat it if necessary. Now, most commonly, a floater does not lead to that. Most commonly, a floater is just a change in the jelly where the collagen fibers clump together and form a floater, basically a cloud. That is what the symptom is. But we can't tell without looking at the patient. So that's why we always tell patients right away, come in to take a look. If it's negative for a detachment or a tear, that's wonderful. We wait a few months to make sure, because some people will adapt to a small floater. But in some people where the floaters do not adapt, or the patients can't adapt to it, then we can talk about treating the patients with this new laser. But you're absolutely right. If you have a new floater, a new symptom, it's important to go to your eye doctor right away.
So the most common cause of floater is that shrinking of the vitreous jelly and it breaks away from the back of the eye. And I usually tell my patients, you take your age, and that's the percent chance you're going to have that separation. So I'm close to 70. And so there's a 70% chance in my age group that I'm going to get that separation. But just to clarify, that doesn't mean that everybody who gets a vitreous separation will get a detachment. I mean, the retinal detachment is relatively uncommon, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Majority of patients, 90%+ of patients who have a floater symptom, it's a natural change in the jelly. It's just a floater being created, but it's not a, so it's a separation, but not a tear or detachment. So it's very rare. It's not a very common occurrence, but it does happen once in a while. So if you have a new floater or something happened, I want people to worry about that. It's just very, very important to go see an eye doctor just to make sure to confirm that everything is fine. But you're absolutely right. Majority of patients, when they have a floater, it's not a detachment or a tear.
And it's always good to detect that small retinal tear early, because a simple laser procedure sometimes can correct it and prevent you from a serious complication like a retinal detachment where you can have the potential to go blind.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, the laser treatment, in fact, I had a young patient came in yesterday, back in the office, came in for eye exam and said, hey, doc, I have some new floaters. I looked at the eye, had a small round hole in the retina. We took about 5 minutes, went back to the room. We have a laser in the room. We just went ahead and sealed it off. The patient's fine. So it's always important not to worry. Just come in, and the majority of times you can seal it off very quickly with the in-office procedure.
What about other causes of floaters that we have to be concerned with?
Sure. I mean, you know, there's inflammation that can cause floaters. Some people want to have what we call vitritis, which is inflammation of the eye, which can be caused. And people have other autoimmune conditions. They can have floaters. There's also symptoms of floaters where there's sometimes calcium salts that can build up in the eye, which are also known as what we call astroid hyalinosis, which are also can cause symptoms of floaters as well. So floaters can be caused by inflammation. Sometimes after cataract surgery, people will notice floaters more often. That's to take out the cataract. You put a new lens in the eye. People can see better, and they actually notice floaters that they never saw before as well. So floaters can be a common occurrence in other conditions and can be seen commonly after even things like cataract surgery as well.
So you've been in the past now when somebody had a floater that was significant. I guess the only treatment we had was to refer them to a retinal specialist and do a procedure called a vitrectomy, which essentially the surgeon goes in with very tiny instruments and removes most of the vitreous jelly, including the floaters. And this procedure was fraught with complications. In fact, everybody that had this procedure would develop a cataract. And then you'd need a second operation. So I guess that's one of the reasons why most ophthalmologists were so reluctant to recommend this procedure. I wonder if you could just comment on the vitrectomy.
Sure, absolutely. Vitrectomy is a good option for some people. I mean, the surgery has been done for many years, and over the last couple of decades, it's become safer and quicker, no doubt. But I think that the problem is, as you said, no matter how quick and how safe the surgeons are, there is a higher risk of developing a cataract. Majority of patients within 2 years will develop some type of lens change or a cataract, a clouding of the lens, and may require a surgery for that. There's also risk because you're going in the eye, you're making incisions into the eye. You also have a slight risk of an infection, or called endophthalmitis. There's always also a risk of having the pressure go up in the eye, which can lead to something called glaucoma. Not always, but it's a small risk that can happen. There's also time off of work. There's healing time. We're on drops after surgery, an antibiotic drop, there's a steroid drop.
Well, we're coming up to a break on Healthy Vision, and you're listening to Dr. Paul Singh, and we're talking about a big problem with vitreous floaters. And when we come back, we're going to talk about an exciting new development that may be a solution to eliminate floaters permanently. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Healthy Vision. And let's continue talking about floaters. And let's review a little bit about the dangers of the vitrectomy. Although many of our patients underwent vitrectomy for really serious floaters, most ophthalmologists were kind of reluctant to recommend this procedure or even do it because of the complications, correct?
Absolutely. I think that's, you know, anytime we talk about surgery in ophthalmology or anything in medicine, it's always what we call the risk-benefit ratio. In other words, how much risk you want to take for the benefit. And, you know, with vitrectomy, historically, because of those risks we talked about with pressures and cataract and infection risk and time off of work and drops, et cetera, most doctors said it's not worth it because although floaters are a nuisance for a lot of patients and can affect the daily life, doctors thought it wasn't worth the risk of it as well. So a lot of us, doctors, you know, even me included until a few years ago, would just say, you know what, you're fine, live with the floaters, it's not worth it, unless they're so debilitating where they couldn't function at all, or the doctor felt in his own hair, too bad, he'd recommend vitrectomy. But a very small percentage of patients would be offered a vitrectomy, even those specialists who do offer vitrectomy in their practice. So many of our patients were just ignored and told, live with it, deal with it, which has been really a big frustration for a lot of our patients.
Now, most of us ophthalmologists, we did know of a procedure called the YAG vitreolysis. This is using a special type of laser to treat the floater, but initially these treatments just took a large floater and then broke it up into maybe 10 or 20 smaller floaters. So, you know, my feeling was that this was not a good procedure, using a laser to break up the floaters. But now there's some new technology that has kind of revolutionized the treatment of floaters. And I wonder if you could talk about the new technology and your experience.
Sure, absolutely. There's a new technology. There's a company that came out a few years ago called LX from Australia. They came out with a new technology of a laser system. And it addressed a couple of the big issues you face. You're absolutely right. The vitreolysis procedure has been done for years, since the 80s, actually. And the problem historically with the lasers we use for that, historically did not have the ability to visualize all the way to the retina. So in other words, we could not see a lot of it. What we call symptomatic floaters. Well, the floaters that were bothering patients were further back in the middle of the back of the eye or even closer to the retina. And so a lot of the illumination towers, we call them, our view was not able to see them and address them. The other product of the problem with the older lasers is that because of the different power, it did not allow us to have good spatial context. In other words, we as a surgeon, even with our special lens that we put on the eye, could not see where the floater was in relation to where the retina is. So how far are we from the retina from a safety perspective or from the lens? We want to make sure we don't hit the lens. So spatial context is a problem. And so with this new laser system, is a new what we call illumination tower, giving coaxial illumination, being able to give us the ability to see where the floater is, even all the way back to the back part of the eye, but also allow us to know where it is in relation to other structures in the eye. That was a big, big, big advancement. The second thing is it has a different different energy delivery system. Meaning, right now with the older lasers, the dispersion of energy was much greater. What they did with this laser, they truncated the beam to allow us to have less what we call shock wave, less dispersion of energy. So even at higher energy levels of settings on the laser, the amount of dispersion of energy in the eye is very minimal, and there's a very minimal increase in shock waves as you increase the energy in the laser. Why that's important, as you mentioned, before we would just hit a couple of shots for some floaters and cause maybe 10 floaters, and patients would say, Doc, I have a lot of symptoms now, even more symptoms, or we couldn't see the actual symptomatic floaters in the back of the eye. By having a better view and be able to see floaters that we couldn't see historically and being able to go to higher levels of energy, we can actually cause plasma breakdown. We can actually cause solid to gaseous state or basically vaporize, as you mentioned, these floaters. So now we don't stop at 10 shots. We'll do actually sometimes 200 or 300 shots, which goes by within a few minutes very quick. But we can actually now take those small floaters, break them up, and vaporize in small pieces. So our end result is true vaporization. So a clump, like what we call a Weiss ring, which is a solitary clump of vitreous that comes off the nerve, a very common type of floater. Majority of our patients in our studies that we've presented at many meetings, 90%+ of patients, we can get rid of those floaters within one or two sessions. So these are the significant advancements in the laser treatment now, being able to visualize so where we are in the vitreous, to make sure we don't hit any other structures, and the new energy delivery system allows us to go to higher energy levels to vaporize floaters and do higher number of shots without causing inflammation or any other problems in the eye, which is why now it's much more efficacious, and we've shown in studies it's extremely safe of a procedure as well compared to not doing anything at all. So it's improved safety and the efficacy of the procedure.
Yeah, when I discussed this new technology with a good friend of mine who's a retinal specialist in Rome, the first question he said to me was, well, what's the incidence of damage to the retina? Because safety is a concern. And then talking to the company, I was really surprised that in the FDA trial, there was one event where there was a small, I think, detachment or break in the retina, but that was in the control group. That was a group that did not get the laser. And I said to the representative, thank goodness for that. It appears to be a very, very safe procedure, which has, you know, ophthalmologists and surgeons, we want absolute safety for our patient. So the next question I have is, how successful is it? Because, you know, a lot of times we see patients with floaters and we think, oh, they're neurotic, they're just obsessed with these minor problems. So, you know, what is the satisfaction rate for patients and how successful is the procedure?
Sure, absolutely. Well, we've done a couple of studies that we've actually presented at the Academy of Ophthalmology and as well as at the ASCRS, the Association of Cataract Refractive Surgery. And what we found in our study that we did, we had two studies. One was a prospective study looking at 360-plus patients going forward. And we found over 92% success rate, meaning patients were extremely satisfied. And what we mean by that is we asked them, number one, did the laser make a difference, yes or no? Over 92% of patients said, yes, it made a difference. And out of that, we found that, again, about over 90% of those patients said it made a complete difference when it was resolved. And it was best for those patients where those what we call solitary floaters, meaning when you have a large clump or what we call a Weiss ring, where it's a solitary floater opacity, we were able to get rid of that very cleanly because the doctor could recognize the floater that was causing the actual symptoms. See, the problem with floaters is sometimes people may have multiple floaters in their eye that we see as physicians, but not every floater is causing a symptom. Not everybody can see all the floaters in their eye. So being able to correlate the floater with the patient's symptom is a big issue. And so with having a solitary Weiss ring, like one lesion or one capacity, we can get those patients 90%+. It drops down to about 80% or so when you have multiple floaters, but still a significant impact. So majority of our patients who have even multiple strings and clouds, we can improve them about 80%+ of the time with high safety. It's a 5-minute procedure in the office that requires no injections, no patches, no specific drops, no restrictions after the procedure. You can go and do any activity the same day. With that high safety and with a minimal disruption in daily life, we can improve almost most type of floaters. With the people who have those larger multiple floaters and clouds and strings, they may take also multiple sessions. They can take sometimes 2 or 3 even more sessions to get rid of the entire amount of floater as well. And the reason why is because the laser energy is very concentrated. It doesn't blow up the eye. It's a very microscopic area of what we call plasma, which means the vaporization is occurring in a small area. But if we do too many shots, once in a blue moon, we don't want, because gas bubbles are formed, we don't want to have pressure to go up in the eye. So to limit the risk of any pressure spikes in the eye, we don't do thousands and thousands of shots at one time. I limit to about 500 or 600 shots, which sounds like a lot, but it goes very quickly. By limiting the number of shots, though, that way we can't get rid of every single floater in one session. So we always tell patients, if you have a large cloud multiple floaters, I tell them, and I, expectation building is to say, look, don't worry, we'll take care of you, but it may require two or three sessions over time from a safety perspective to get rid of the entire a large amount of floaters that you have in strings, because you are breaking up some floaters and you're vaporizing. The floaters that you broke up that you did not vaporize, those may come back together. So commonly, patients will say, doc, after one session, I'm much better, I'm 50% better, but I still have some floaters, and we can go ahead and do a second or third session if we need to. But it's extremely safe, and that's what I think makes it very palatable and very exciting for doctors, because it's always fine to go ahead and do a second or third session if you need to.
It's amazing, you know, you mentioned the 90% success rate, because there is no ophthalmic procedure where we get 100% success rate. So that is extremely important to know that that success rate is high, and also that you can repeat the laser procedure to get rid of those additional floaters. So I want to thank you so much for sharing this information. And for those of you that are listening, if you want additional information on floaters, give the office a call at 800-430-9328. Or go to endfloaters.com, endfloaters.com, and more information. So we're coming up to another break, and we'll be right back. When we come back, we're going to be talking about another laser that is revolutionizing ophthalmology in terms of treating macular degeneration. And we'll be right back after this break. Welcome to Healthy Vision. This is your host, Dr. Edward Kondrat, and thank you so much for joining us. My guest is Dr. Paul Singh, who's an assistant professor of ophthalmology and clinical researcher, and he's going to share with me some exciting news for those of you that are suffering from macular degeneration. So let's talk a little bit about the problem with macular degeneration. I know that now we have the injections, which can be beneficial in many patients, but the long-term studies just aren't that great. I know I looked at the CAT study, and just about everybody that had injections over a five-year period had less vision than when they started. So we're looking for technologies that can slow this process, and I think we have something that has piqued the interest of a lot of ophthalmologists. So let's talk about the macular degeneration problem first, and then we'll go into the new technology.
Sure. You know, I think you're absolutely right. You know, macular degeneration is one of the toughest diseases that we face in ophthalmology. You know, we've had such great technology improvements in cataract and glaucoma and other conditions, but with macular, you know, we've had a very difficult time addressing people who have earlier degeneration. So you mentioned injections. You know, degeneration is a problem with the center of the vision, which is called a macula. We have the most receptors for central clarity of vision. And there's a lot of metabolism there. So I tell patients all the time, it's basically a buildup of waste products in the center of the eye that cause scarring. And in one of the layers of the retina, the back lining of the eye. And right now, we don't have a lot to tell patients except for take vitamins, you know, wear sunglasses, don't smoke. These are typical kind of discussions that we have, but we can't do much else to help prevent it from progressing except for those simple actions. Once it becomes extremely advanced, then you have something called wet degeneration, where there's actually what we call leaking or bleeding of the blood vessels in the back of the eye. We have those injections that can help stop the leaking or bleeding of those blood vessels. But by then, it's already been pretty significant. It's already more advanced by then when we have wet degeneration. So the key is, how do we somehow address these patients earlier in the disease process and maybe halt the disease or just really slow it down and kind of modify the disease? And that's where we've had a hard time historically until this new laser that's come out called 2RT, which is definitely what we call a retinal rejuvenation type of laser, which I can talk about as well.
Well, it's interesting. This laser uses a low energy of light, correct?
Go ahead, sorry.
It's a low laser energy, so it isn't like the typical laser that has that intense energy that causes a retinal burn.
Exactly right. That's the big difference. So historically, you know, we've had lasers in ophthalmology for decades, since the 70s and 80s. And initially it started with what we call, milliseconds. So there's always how quick and how long of a duration of the laser pulse. And so initial argon lasers, we call them, they had big uses in retina. They would actually be able to protect people with diabetes. We would kind of burn the periphery of the retina to decrease the oxygen demand of the eye. So these lasers were wonderful. But when it comes to the center of the eye, the macula, if you use a laser that's like that, which has thermal damage, it can destroy the full thickness of the retina. And so the problem is if you do a laser in the center of the eye, you actually destroy some of that, also the healthy receptors. So you have a lot of collateral damage with these what we call thermal lasers or these millisecond lasers. So what this laser is 2RT laser, is a nanosecond laser. Very, very short duration. And the delivery of energy is in a non-continuous state, meaning it's not a continuous pulse, basically, and it's spread out with a larger spot size, what we call 400 microns.
It's almost like you're painting the retina very lightly with this laser.
Very good analogy. Absolutely right.
So what really intrigued me about this laser, because for the last 10 years, those of you that listen to Healthy Vision know that I'm a big advocate of using the cold laser to help macular degeneration and syntonic light therapy. And Dr. Singh, you may not be familiar with syntonic light therapy, but this is using non-coherent light where the patient looks at different filters of light. And the syntonic light has been shown to help regenerate the retina, this low energy of non-coherent light. And the cold laser, using red infrared light, shining it through a closed eyelid, there's been several studies that have shown that it helps reduce the damage of macular degeneration. In fact, I could send you the articles demonstrating the use of the cold laser. And so that's why I became so intrigued, because this laser kind of goes along with my philosophy. Let's use a laser for regeneration, not destruction. Because many of the listeners know that, the laser for macular degeneration, or the laser for diabetic retinopathy, we're destroying the retina with a highly intense laser. Years ago, we would use the laser for wet macular. We would actually destroy the leaking blood vessels. But at the same time that we would destroy the leaking blood vessels, we would be destroying healthy functioning retinal cells. So it was a problem. We're helping the patient, but we're destroying part of the eye.
Exactly. And exactly right. With this nanosecond laser, it stimulates, it basically disrupts versus destroys. And what it does, it stimulates a natural reaction in the eye in one of the membranes called the RPE, or Bruch's membrane, which is where we think the area of damage is occurring from macular degeneration. So it stimulates that part of it, but it does not affect the light cells or the photoreceptors, which is really the cells that help us see. And so what it does, it stimulates the kind of nutritional transportation, which is what we think is happening. We think that there's a decrease in the transportation of nutrition from the blood vessels behind the retina to the retina, and that's what's causing a buildup of what we call lipid and other junk, I call it, to my patients. And so this is stimulating that layer to allow that transportation to actually clean up, so to speak. And it's similar to in glaucoma. There's a laser called SLT in glaucoma that also allows it to rejuvenate the drainage system of the eye naturally by releasing enzymes in the body, what we call metalloproteinases, that help us open the drain. It's the same principle. We're actually allowing the own body to release its own enzymes and chemicals to open up and really help clean out those nasty junk that's building up in the retina. So you're absolutely right. We're rejuvenating the receptors and the health of the retina versus destroying and blessing, blocking.
Yeah, because I always describe to my patients that the earliest changes in macular degeneration, the retinal cells are becoming constipated. They can't get rid of toxins and debris. So we need to treat those retinal cells. And of course then, that's why I'm an advocate of drinking more water, detoxifying the body, you know, shifting your diet, avoiding smoking and all these things that can cause additional damage. But this laser really intrigued me because it's looking at actually stimulating, is it stimulating Brooks membrane and the retinal pigment epithelium at the same time, or what is the actual mechanism?
Yeah, we think it's actually helping. So it's really more the RPE, but we think so. We think the area of pathology is actually Brooks membrane. So we think it's a combination of both. And what we think is doing is it's causing it's accepted by the melanosomes and releases these enzymes, these metalloproteinases, which actually kind of clean up, get rid of some of the lipid deposits and the waste products that are building up there as well. So it is a combination of both, but it's specifically an RPE in behind versus and more the inner retina, which is the, you know, receptors of the photoreceptors, which is what helps us see as well. So there's less collateral damage than those older lasers that we used before as well.
I'm smiling now because there's a saying, there's nothing new under the sun. But actually the first ophthalmologist who advocated using this type of light therapy was Dr. William Bates in the early 1900s, if you can believe that. He talked about a procedure called sunning, where you close your eyes and look at the setting sun, and that the sun has the red infrared energy. And you turn your head back and forth, and the bright glow of the sun is transmitted to the retina. And he taught that this procedure could help rejuvenate the eye. And so now the studies that are being done with the red infrared laser and this laser, in a way, is kind of proving what Dr. Bates did early on. Of course, he used nature. He didn't have an expensive laser to deliver these impulses. So I find this really, really fascinating. So
yeah, you know, great ideas are not limited to the technology of time.
This is an amazing technology, and we're coming up to another break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the clinical results. So can this help you if you have macular degeneration? And also, can it have a benefit for other retinal problems such as diabetic macular edema? Is it beneficial with wet and dry? How about Stargardt's disease? Other problems. So you're listening to Healthy Vision with me is Dr. Paul Singh. And when we come back, we'll be talking about the clinical applications and the results of this new laser. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back, and with me is Dr. Paul Singh. So Dr. Singh, let's talk about your experience with this new laser and who can benefit from this new treatment.
Sure, absolutely. Well, you know, there was a study called the Lee study, which is the laser study that was done for age-related macular degeneration. It was a prospective study that was done over 3 years and published date of last year. And what we found, what they found in this study was that a majority of patients in the study, 70%+ of patients who had a specific type of macular degeneration, who did not have what we call reticular pseudodrusen, a specific type of kind of the clumping that's in the back of the eyes, a specific type of clumping. Those who did not have this specific type of clumping found a significant difference. About 70% of patients plus 77% had a less chance of progression from intermediate to advanced stage of macular degeneration. So we talked about people who have earlier degeneration. Well, if you have macular degeneration, this is what we call dry. We have that scarring and that lipid deposits we talked about there. If you have that, we can't do much else for you. And so we have to wait until you have more advanced disease before we can do an injection or a laser, let's say a different laser. Well, this allows us now, and the study shows us that if you have specific type of degeneration without those particular pseudodrusen, you have a 70%+ chance of not progressing to the advanced stage compared to placebo. So that's a very, very big finding. So I think now we potentially have a way of rejuvenating patients who have intermediate stage or earlier stage macular degeneration and helping them prevent from getting more advanced to the stage where they need the injections and other treatments. So I think it's opening up the eyes for a lot of ophthalmologists out in the world to say, hey, we now have a potential option versus just telling people, deal with it and, you know, don't smoking and wear sunglasses, et cetera. So it's a pretty big finding that we found in this study.
This laser then is more for prevention. So you would recommend a patient to have these laser treatments to prevent progression. So the laser itself doesn't improve the visual acuity, or does it improve it in some cases?
It doesn't. There was in the studies, there were a certain amount of patients who did have some improvement in the actual, what we call drusen itself, or the less waste products we were seeing. And in some cases, there was some improvement in vision. But in the study itself, the conclusion was more for prevention, to help prevent from advancing to the advanced stages.
Mm-hmm. So you're recommending this laser for what type of patients in your practice?
Yeah, so people who have what we call intermediate stage, or so macular degeneration, where it's not wet, not leaking or bleeding, and who have drusen that are not what we call reticular pseudodrusen, which is a specific type of drusen, which an ophthalmologist could look at and see, then this would be a perfect laser. So about 70% of people in the study were the right candidates for this type of procedure. So majority of our patients who come into the eye doctor who have what we call intermediate, so they have dry macular degeneration, so they're taking the vitamins, they're doing everything they're told from the ophthalmologist, who are more intermediate stage, who do not have to have injections, let's say, and we want to hopefully prevent them, my recommendation would be to consider having this laser done, because it's, again, does not destroy the tissue. There's no, we did not see in that specific type of patient loss of vision by doing this laser, and we actually found better prevention of progression towards advanced stages. So about probably 70% of our patients who have macular degeneration dry type, intermediate, could qualify based upon the study for this type of laser treatment. So I think it's a large population of patients that would be potentially benefit from this laser.
So my interest, I was really excited to discover this laser for two reasons. Number one, it uses my philosophy of using certain wavelengths of light to help regenerate your retina. Also, I think this may be a very good synergistic treatment to use with some of the therapies that I'm using right now, such as low-level electrical stimulation, microcurrent, which I have found to help not only improve the vision but prevent progression. So using these modalities and then using conventional light therapy, the cold laser and synthetic light therapy, it may work very, very well combining these modalities. So the laser treatment itself, let's talk about how it's performed, how long does it take, how many treatments do you need?
Sure, absolutely. So the procedure is done in the office. It's no injections or patches in the eye or drops after procedure. There's a lens that goes on the eye, and you look through kind of like an exam room lane, like you see in regular exam rooms. It's a laser that's very typical of other lasers that we use, and there's no pain felt by the patient as well. It takes just minutes to do the laser, so it's not a long procedure. And again, we're going to have to wait and see in terms of number of sessions over time, in terms of long-term advancements. But the beautiful thing about this procedure, it's very minimally invasive. So for patients, they can come and go in the office, go back to regular activity after the procedure, and not a lot of downtime, kind of like we talked about the laser treatment for floaters. Similar procedure in terms of downtime for the patient after the procedure is done.
So there's no patching of the eye after the procedure, and no
no patching, no injections.
And the recommended frequency now is every 6 months. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a recommended frequency, but I think what we're going to see is, depending on how, again, when you look at real life data as it comes out, when we look at phase four data and more treatments coming out with a different type of floater, different type of macular degeneration patients, we might see, just like we do with injections, the frequency may change less or more depending on the response rates. I think we're going to see, but at this point, every 6 months is a recommended dose. But again, I think we're going to wait and see as time goes on, because it's non-destructive. I think we're going to see doctors to kind of tailor depending on the outcomes and what they're seeing with their patients in their own offices.
So this laser potentially has the could have the benefit for treating all different types of retinal disorders, such as Stargardt's disease, retinitis pigmentosa. Has anybody investigated these different disorders?
Not that I'm aware of at this moment. I don't think that we have the data on those type of conditions, because I think right now that really will focus mostly on AMD. And it's such a newer laser, not enough doctors have it to have a larger study. But I think you're absolutely right. I think because of the safety, again, and the relative non-thermal damage we don't see with, like, other lasers, we're not destroying the photoreceptors, I think there's a good option to talk about other types of macular issues and other parafoveal, which are, issues around the center of the eye where we historically did not even touch, because of risk of destroying the healthy cells, now we may consider other procedures that we could not do and other conditions. This might be appropriate for those kind of patients. And we talked about diabetes. You know, this is something that has been shown in studies to be as good as our older lasers, our thermal lasers, to help with diabetes in terms of macular edema, clinically significant macular edema. And so I think in diabetic patients where, you know, let's say the injections aren't working as well or the swelling is right in the center of the eye and we were afraid to use a thermal laser that could destroy the healthy cells, this is another option too for diabetes patients. So I think in a number of issues, a number of conditions that affect the health of the retina and the retinal pigment epithelium, I think this is something that could be used, at least addressed and I think studied more in the future as more doctors adopt this technology.
Yeah, I think that the macular edema in diabetics, this would have a tremendous application because often that's a frustrating condition to treat. And once again, many ophthalmologists are just resorting to injections. And I believe that the injections are just a short-term treatment. They may reduce the swelling and inflammation and improve the acuity temporarily. But now we're looking at a procedure that actually helps regenerate the retina, strengthens the retina, which I think is a needed procedure in ophthalmology. And I think this could really revolutionize the way we approach a lot of these patients.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, we talk about injections. Jeff's right. There's we call anti-VEGF, injections and steroid injections for diabetic macular edema and the macula. But you're right. There's risks of infection, risk of a pressure spike going up with steroid injections. And patients have to come back every month, sometimes every few months for these injections. So you're absolutely right. I think we historically love the injections because our lasers for macular edema cause destruction. And we don't want to cause loss of blood flow and cause more destruction of the macula, which is why we didn't use lasers often for macular edema. But now we have this type of laser that can augment with the injections. So you may want the injections to get some of the swelling down. Do the laser to stimulate those cells and help rejuvenate those cells. It might be even more synergistic with each other than using the previous lasers with injections. So you're absolutely right. The potential for diabetes, I think, is significant, no doubt.
And then we're all concerned with the injections, too, because there's been several studies that show that a large percentage of patients that get frequent injections will develop scarring and damage and atrophy of the retinal pigment epithelium. So this is a procedure that I think is welcomed in the area of ophthalmology, and especially in my practice because I'm looking at more natural methods to strengthen the eye to help treat the underlying cause. So I think this is a laser that fits that bill. So we're coming up to a close on Healthy Vision, and Dr. Singh, I want to thank you so much for taking time from your busy practice to share all this information. And let's keep in touch. I'd love to have you on the radio show again.
I appreciate that. It was a wonderful conversation. I learned a lot from you, too. So thank you very much for that as well.
And if you want additional information, give the office a call at 800-430-9328. This is your host, Dr. Edward Kondrat, wishing all of you good health and clear vision.